With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
From Tally to Cali,
it's time
to wake up.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up.
WarChant.com is your ultimate seminal sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
One ball, Corner Pocket.
Now here's WarChant.com's Ass on Hudjavandi.
And Corey Clark.
Oh, come on.
Wake up! What is up, everybody? It's Wake Up War Chant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. Coming up on today's show, there was a scrimmage on Saturday. The head coach had effusive praise for seemingly everybody. What does it all mean? Recruiting wrap-up with Matt Lassier and a great weekend on the diamond for the men and the women. Wake Up War Chant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, Tallahassee, Florida, cptallybar.com, the website, 2475 Appalachian Parkway, physical address. Today's lunch special from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., only $8.99, half-pound Black Angus beef burger. Side dish of your choice as well. Go do it, y'all. Again, only $8.99 from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. today. Don't forget tomorrow, trivia night at the CP. Do it. Compete. Flex your muscle. Flex your brain. Have a great time with your friends over the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. WarChant.com, your ultimate seminal sports source. Thumbs up, five-star rating, and review, please. And what was the promo code again? I think it's like FSU and then the numeral 1, everybody, if you're listening to us on YouTube or you can just pretend you're listening to us on YouTube. That'll get you 2 months of access for WarChant.com for only $1. Incredible. Incredible. Almost as incredible as the feats of Corey Clark on a day-in, day-out basis, being a father, being a lead senior writer for WarChant.com. Corey, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, buddy. I trust you had a good weekend.
Yeah, man. Who else went to a funeral and then attended a Zoom with Mike Norvell? This guy.
Yeah, you might have been the only one, I'm guessing.
Guy. Yeah. This guy. So let's get right to it then. Let's talk about that Zoom. Was there anything fun that happened in your orbit this weekend that we need to know about?
No. You know, broke down some women's basketball that I haven't done in a long time with my buddies, Atlanta. Okay. Everybody was excited watching the games on Friday and Sunday, so that was fun and different. But other than that, no, just a normal weekend.
All right, big ratings. Big ratings.
Brady made a diving catch in one of his baseball games.
Did they win the game?
They won that game. Good. Then they got blasted in the second game. Wow. It was a doubleheader. And he got pulled out for apparently loafing. It's one step forward, one step back. It's still fine though. He made a really good catch. He's a good outfielder. We got that going.
Like Casey Stengel out there managing these kids. Come on.
Yeah,
line
exactly
up,
right.
Buddy.
Bobby Cox.
Line up. All right, so, you know, Friday, the podcast was all the observations from Thursday. You weren't there. I was. I didn't mean to say it like in a rude way. Just like, you know, I had to basically unload everything from my notebook, and then you gave some perspective in terms of what you heard after the practice from the interviews and then what Ira had also observed. And you try to put a little bit more of a, you know, spin it forward like, hey, you know, this is just part of the process. Trust the process. A couple people got upset in the comment section. Sorry, everybody. It wasn't a great day in my estimation. Mike was like Oprah handing out cars on Saturday. I felt like Corey. I didn't know. Everybody did great. Quarterbacks did great. Best day for DJ. Brock processing great. Thought Luke is doing a really good job. Running game's going strong. Lawrence is special, spectacular. Roydell Williams handled a lot of the workload. Receivers rise up to the occasion. Malik Benson had maybe his best day. Offensive line opened up the run game. Defensive line was explosive, chaotic. There was created turnovers. What do we take away from a day that seemingly everybody did great? 16-0? Is that what we take away from the Zoom on Saturday?
Would it be 16 if they get a bye?
I didn't know. I didn't want to say 17 because that just sounds way too many games in a 12-team
playoff.
Yeah,
I would think 15-0 maybe because they would get a bye in the first round. So maybe they would only have to play 15 games and not 16. I'm not quite sure how that works.
I'll pull up the bracket.
Well, no. I mean, look. Yes, I was kind of struck by how positive he was about the whole thing. But look, I don't think that's a Norvell like. Golly, I listen to Wake Up War Chant. They don't seem to be all that thrilled with what they've seen so far. Let me pump these kids up with some sunshine. That's not how he goes. That's not how he lives his life. Obviously, we all know he's an avid listener. Mm. But he doesn't let our ideas or thoughts dictate how he talks to us. But no, man, I thought that was very encouraging to hear. The DJ had his best day. And the Malik Benson had his best day, but especially DJ. I mean, that's the one. Because, again, it makes it sound like that we think that DJ's been awful or a disappointment even, and he just hasn't been. He hasn't been that. He just hasn't been incredible. He's been what – he's been solid. But he hasn't been much better than Brock Glenn, if at all. I mean, I think they've been very equal almost. And it sounds like that he took a pretty sizable step in that scrimmage on Saturday, which, look, man, if you're caring about the 2024 Florida State football team and what it can accomplish, the starting quarterback starting to figure things out a little bit in his new offense is a good thing to hear. So that was encouraging. He said he had a couple of long sustained drives to go along with a few explosive plays. So yeah, man, that's what we're hoping to hear. We're hoping to see this week, right?
You know, it's like, all right, so he had sustained drives and he had big plays. It wasn't, you know, it's like everything that you could possibly do great, he did it. Yeah. Everybody did it. The tight ends were involved in the offense and did great. It was like, man, this is fantastic. By the way, it would be 16. They would even if they had a bye, they'd have to play three more games and win them all of them.
Oh, geez. Get it together, NCAA. So a team could theoretically play 17 games this season to win a national championship, right? If you don't have a bye? That's one extra game, right?
Yeah. All right. I'm trying to think. You play third. You win your conference, lose your conference title game, and then not have the bye. So that would be 13 games, and yeah, you'd have to win four.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So that'd be 17 games.
You'd have to win four? I think you'd only have to win three.
I'm looking at the bracket, man. I mean, there'd be four teams with a bye.
I don't think a 12-team playoff to win the whole thing, you'd have to win four different games. I thought it would be three, and the bye would you only have to win two. You're right. You're right. I just did the math. Sorry. Anyway, I don't mean to question you, Aslan.
No, listen. When it comes to math, at all times, please do so. But like I legitimately have the bracket in front of my face. So,
yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. To get to the semifinals, you'd have to win twice.
Yeah.
If you're not one of the byes. No, man. It's better than you like. Man, Norvell talking after the first scrimmage, there was some stuff he really didn't like. And he's transparent enough in just the way he talks about these things where he's never, ever, ever going to say, yeah, our quarterbacks really sucked. They didn't see it. They're not seeing what we want them to see. He's not the UCLA basketball coach. I can't remember. Just
Mick Cronin.
Yeah, he's not Mick Cronin that just throws his kids
Rick
under
Pitino?
The bus nonstop. Yeah.
Rick Pitino's like, I just don't like my guys.
But you could tell that he was not, after that first scrimmage, he was not happy with what he saw from his offense. And quite frankly, through the next week, I mean, again, he talked about the receivers. He said they had a clean scrimmage after what they, you know, they'd struggled a little bit, maybe more than a little bit, on Tuesday and Thursday in those practices, the ones we saw with drops. And it sounds like they didn't struggle with that. On Saturday, sounds like Hakeem made some contested catches. But the way he talked about DJ and kind of that, again, that smile that crept across his face when he was talking about how it seemed like he was getting more and more comfortable. And he was really, really good. I think he even used a couple of reallys maybe. I don't know. But it was very adamant. He was very adamant that DJ had his best day. And it was very obvious that DJ had his best day with just kind of, I don't know, man, how – how excited, the gleam in his eye, the twinkle in Norvell's eye. You're like, yeah, man, he's not – this isn't coach speak trying to just blow up one of his kids and make him feel great. I mean, I think he legitimately – I don't think, I know he legitimately saw some really good things from DJ on Saturday, which, again, is good. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been special either. Maybe on Saturday he showed a little special, and that's, you know, that's probably what you're going to need to get to the playoff.
Very well said. I do wonder, I feel like he's had a career thus far that's been marked by highs and lows. So I think it's going to be, I don't know, is it too much to say that it's going to be important for him to carry that into this week and then however he can perform in front of everybody inside of a renovated Doak Campbell Stadium here on the 20th?
I mean, as important as it can be in April, it would be a good sign, though, right? It would be encouraging that it's not a fluke. Not that we think it's a fluke necessarily. Right, we don't think he's going to be awful, but that it's something he's building on. You know, anybody, you know, David Dulkey scored 32 against North Carolina. That didn't necessarily mean he was going to go hit six threes or eight threes every game, and he didn't. That was a career high. But what it did, he did build on it. He became a much better shooter that year. And so maybe, and that's probably neither here nor there, but it's just the first example that came to my mind. But if DJ can build on it and just look more comfortable and more, you know, just good, for lack of a I say the for lack of a better word. There's a lot better words than good that I could have used, but I'm old, folks, and sometimes the words just don't come to me. But the fact that if he looks more and more comfortable in this offense, we know this offense could be good if it gets good quarterback play. It can be great if it gets good quarterback play. So maybe Saturday was the first time Norvell saw, with the combination of the receivers making plays too now, where he saw good to really good quarterback play from this current group, crop of guys. That's because they're going to need it, man. They just are. The running game should be better. We hope it's better overall. But even still, DJ, for this team to accomplish what it's what it needs to accomplish or wants to accomplish, DJ's got to be good, man. He's got to be better than he's been that we've seen. And it sounds like Saturday he was.
Quick aside, you know, Norvell was asked specifically about Lawrence Toefele, and he mentioned how, you know, Lawrence won the MVP of the last game of the season last year. And now he's even better than he was.
Like, hey, Mike, I am with you.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like,
that ACC championship game was the last game of the season. The other thing didn't count.
Yeah.
Just, yes.
And I wonder, too, now when we get to the playoff and stuff, if, you know, if we're just going to – your record is always going to be based off a 12-game schedule, and then whether you're the national champion or not, or if we're really going to – you know, we're never going to not count wins, but it'd be kind of cool if we maybe de-emphasize counting these ridiculous bowl games. But that was just a thought I had on a four-hour drive back up here to Tallahassee. Hmm. So three seasons as a starter, DJ has a 58.3% completion percentage in the three seasons as a starter. That's his average. His last year in Clemson, he averaged 62.1% completion percentage. The year before that, in 21, he was at 55.6. This past year at Oregon State, 57.1. Do you want to hear sustained drives? Is that the thing you kind of prefer to hear, maybe, the growth from DJ? Or do you want to hear the big play aspect? Because, you know, when you're averaging 58% of your passes kind of for your career, that doesn't really lend to being like a sustained drive kind of guy. Or is that something that he'll need to unlock, you think, to be able to manage and lead this offense in the best way possible?
Man, I don't even know if I care about – I mean, I do care about completion percentage. But to me, and this is something we could never know about how it was in the scrimmage, but third down conversions, that's the key to everything, man. Third down in red zone. That is the key to an offense. That is the key to having a great offense. And that is the key to scoring a lot of points, being good on third down. There were times last year when the offense wasn't great on third down. Overall, the last 2 years with Jordan Travis running the show, it was a very good offense on third down because he was a very good quarterback. But I that's what I care about the most, honestly, is third down conversion. Like, you know, you don't want to have a 44% completion percentage. But if you have a 58 completion percentage, but the offense as a whole converts 50% of its third downs, well, you're going to win a lot of, so you're going to score a lot of points and win a lot of games. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a 70 percenter ever. He takes too many shots. And I mean not like hits. I mean he takes too many shots downfield, and those are harder to complete. But I like that aspect of his game. I just want him, if it's second and six, and he decides to eschew the tight end or the running back in the flat because he's got one-on-one on a post, and he wants to hit a 75-yard home run, and it's just out of reach, and now you're third and six. Well, I just want him to be the guy that can come back and complete an 8-yard pass on third and six. I didn't watch enough Oregon State to know if he's improved in that area, but I assume he did because he was a pretty good quarterback last year. So I assume he got better at that than he was at Clemson. We'll see. Again, it's good to hear Norvell talking positively about him, though.
It did not seem manufactured
at all. That seemed genuine. And then also, you know, they've played two scrimmages now, and Malik Benson apparently has scored three touchdowns in two scrimmages. And it's not like he hasn't been incredible in the practices we've watched, but he's been good. He certainly, showed the speed and showed his ability to make some plays. So, that is a good sign that my man, when he's in a scrimmage, is finding a way to get in the end zone. Maybe he is the number one guy.
Also, Jalen Lucas, apparently still him.
Yeah, he just laughed talking about him, right?
Yeah.
Like, basically, Jalen Lucas did Jalen Lucas things, was essentially, that might have been a direct quote, but it's essentially what he said. That guy is going to be a problem for defenses.
Fun fact, Florida State third down conversion percentage last year, 92nd in the country. Oregon State third down conversion percentage, 68th.
I wonder what, so he's better already. I wonder what it was. I mean, you think of like, think about those last three games, man.
Right.
Florida, Louisville, and then Georgia. I wonder what the third down percentage combined was for those three games. I'm going to guess like 20%, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, they punted a bunch. Yeah. I bet before that, it was at least middle of the road, middle of the pack. Yeah. And it didn't help them, too, last year, honestly. The running game wasn't great. So they did have a lot of third and longs, third and longers than they would like. There weren't a lot of third and twos. And this year, again, third and two, third and three, you like your chances of that big hoss at quarterback being able to get you a couple yards just by falling forward.
Well, I hope so. Well, let's just keep him healthy. We can do that by helping him out and giving him some Vitamin Energy Immune Plus. 260 milligrams of all-natural caffeine and nutrients to help boost your immune system. Immune support, if you will. Flavor's also great. The Tango Orange, it's my favorite. It tastes great, like for real. If they made some kind of just, I don't know, like a Sunny Delight bottle of just Tango Orange flavored liquid, I'd probably drink that every single day. But I take a shot of it, and I get a whole bunch of energy to get my day going strong. Week four, we're starting, Corey, of our sailing readiness program for me, which is really just amounted to building up my cardiovascular system, which has been cool because I'll be up to like 20 minutes of cardio after my workouts. I've actually, I don't want to say I've hit the rower's high. I know there's such a thing as a rower's high. It might be the vitamin energy, but like at minute 15, I'm like, oh man, like I hope this ends. And then I'll hit minute 18, which was like my stop point last week. And I'm like, you know what? I could keep going. I'm like, but I got to get ready and go to practice. So I'm going to just get off the rowing machine. But
you're rowing for 20 minutes ish.
Not fast. Not
still,
fast
though.
At all.
You're doing it though. That's good.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Appreciate that. Have a friend in your corner. And if you don't, have vitamin energy to help you feel better. The Mood Plus is available as well. Variety packs, it's all there. VitaminEnergy.com, promo code WarChampBogo. WarChamp, B-O-G-O. Shake it and take it. Defensive line also was like the big winner of the day, it felt like, Corey. I think in the opening statement, Norvell, after talking about the quarterbacks like in a general perspective, just talked about the explosiveness, the aggressiveness. I like how he talked about Marvin Jones Jr.
That caught my ear.
The movements he makes.
Yep.
Yeah. He's legit, and I don't know at what point do we kidnap Papuchis and take him to Biloxi and just hit the tables all night because he gets Jermaine and then he gets Jared, and then now it seems like Marvin Jones Jr. is probably going to be able to maintain the level of quality that we've grown accustomed to under Papuchis here.
Maybe not quite those two guys, but if he's a reasonable facsimile to go along with Peyton, who has been developed here, and then Lola Hea, who's going to be a handful for anybody as well. That's a pretty good trio they got at defensive end. And yeah, man, maybe it's defensive end you here.
Mm.
It's DEU. By the way, I looked it up real quick. But yes, that caught my ear. I looked up the third down conversion, so I go back to that in a second.
Oh, nice.
But he mentioned, I think it was almost unsolicited. I don't think he was asked, like, hey, how did Marvin look?
Oh,
he hasn't
yeah,
really
yeah.
been asked about Marvin this
nope.
spring at all, really.
Correct.
Which is weird. You know, it's part of the oddity of us watching practice. Like, if we weren't watching practice, if we were like every other college beat in the country and didn't get to watch, we would ask them, how's so-and-so looking? How's mm-hmm. this guy looking? How's that guy looking? But we all watch, so we know. So it's like, you know, we ask about Lucas just so we know we're writing a story on Lucas because he's been above and beyond what anybody thought. So you do ask about that. And if somebody has a couple really good catches or a big day, you'll ask about that. Marvin Jones, I wouldn't say he's like stood out like being incredible, but he's just there and he's been good. And he does move really well. But it's like we watch him, so it's like we don't even think to ask him because we already know. You know what I mean?
Right,
like it's
right.
We don't need a quote from him talking about Marvin Jones because I could just write and say or talk and say, yeah, man, he moves really well for that size. But so unsolicited on Saturday after the scrimmage, he did, like Aslan mentioned, he talked about how somebody that size that moves like that, and he kind of shook his head and smiled. And it's like, yeah, man, they might have gotten themselves another one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a reason he was the big-time deal coming out of high school. Certainly got the pedigree, certainly got the DNA. And he's going to be have a chance to really contribute here at Florida State. And he certainly looks the part. And with him and Peyton and Lolahea, that's a nice trio if they can stay healthy. And that did catch my ear. It's always the ones that are unsolicited.
Mm-hmm.
Like Toa Feely, what he said about Toa Feely was not jaw-dropping, but close to it. Like, wow, did he use the word special? I thought
not even really paraphrase. I apologize, but
thought he said like incredible or unbelievable or something. He's right, like, and right. he's better than he's ever been. And he's been really good. Something yeah. like that.
He said just about, like he said, he was, well, listen, like, listen, he was the MVP of the game, the last game of the season last year. And he's even better than that. You know, just trying to say he was an MVP of a championship game. He's grown off of that. So that just gives you an idea of just how much better he is and how great he is right now.
So, yeah, that was, again, defensive line is going to be a key to everything. Mm-hmm. They had one of the best in the country this past season, which is why they were one of the best defenses in the country and one of the best teams in the country. And, again, I don't know if it's going to be to that level, but I think they have more bodies. I think they have more depth. Not as high end, but we'll see, man. Maybe Marvin is a first round pick. Maybe Patrick Payton's a first or second round pick. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. They're both good. Patrick Payton's certainly been productive, and Lord knows my man likes to bat some balls in the air.
Maybe
he's a ball batting fool.
Yeah, I mean maybe we can get some more, you know, batted balls resulting in interceptions. That'll be like a whole new stat for him that will help shoot his draft stock.
That's the one. You know what? That's the one thing I haven't liked about his batted balls. So
it's like
far.
Yeah, blocking shots in the NBA. It's like, you know, why do you swat it into the stands?
Don't block it out of bounds.
Yeah,
block it to a teammate. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Mutombo was pretty good at that. He was pretty good about blocking balls back to Mookie Blaylock or one of his teammates back in the day. So anyway, I looked it up. The last three games. They were 9 of 44 in third down conversions. Against Louisville, they were 3 of 18. They had 18
drives?
Third down. I don't know how that worked, but yeah, they must have had 18 possessions. Or I guess they went for it on fourth down a couple times. But they had 16 possessions, and they picked up 3 third downs the whole game. They were 3 of 18 on third down against Louisville. So that was 20%, 20.4% those last three games. So before that, I bet they were middle of the road.
Yeah.
But that was obviously a horrible end to the season offensively. It kind of skewed all the numbers in a really bad way. But, yeah, man, I that scrimmage, it's easy to get like when it comes to watching a team practice in the spring or just going through the spring practice as a fan or as a media member, you can get kind of not lost in the weeds, but it just kind of comes. I don't even know what I'm trying to say.
Groundhog Day-ish.
It's just over and over. And it's like you don't really see the forest through the trees a little bit. And you kind of can't. You're like, okay, yeah, they're good, whatever. You just kind of get numb to it.
Yeah.
But then I feel like a day like Saturday and the way the head coach talked was kind of a jolt of, to me anyway, And again, I don't think he was doing it for this purpose. It was a jolt of excitement, like, oh, yeah, there is a lot of reasons to be optimistic and excited about this team. Because, yeah, when you watch a two-hour practice and there's like six really positive plays where you're like, wow, that was really impressive. That was incredible. Well, that means there were like 90 that weren't. You know, and you're like, all right, well, that was okay. All right, okay, that was something. But, like, to hear him talk about what he saw and how excited he was about what he saw, you know, filled me with some excitement.
And, again, I mean, I know I was, you know, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but, I mean, he really did compliment seemingly every segment yeah. of every side of the ball. We didn't get a lot of special teams play out of him, and I don't think we heard about linebackers and defensive backs. But after a second scrimmage, is that pretty much – could you think of any two better segments to get spotlighted and kind of lifted up and noticed by your head coach than quarterback in your defensive line at this point, Corey?
Well, no, probably not. I think, like I just said, the defensive line is going to be, you know, just an enormous part of this team and this year. And then quarterback, it's just it's the great unknown. Like, he is known as what he is, as what he's been, but we don't know what he's going to be like in this offense. Could he be Clemson 2021? You hope not. Could he be Oregon State 23? That'd be nice. Could he be better than that? Could he be Jordan 2022? Like, I don't know what his ceiling is in this offense, but yeah. So I would say those two, you know, it would be nice. I think, well, I don't know, man, because it's the whole yin and yang of a scrimmage. Like, yeah, that's awesome. The defensive line was really good. What does that say about your offensive line? And vice versa, if he'd said, look, I thought the offensive line blocked great, opened up huge holes. DJ had all day to throw, was going to his third and fourth read and finding them. It's like, well, that's not really great. Your defensive line is supposed to be creating havoc. So it's kind of the yin and yang of what you – but, yes, I would say defensive line is kind of a known. It's good to hear that even with the defensive line apparently playing really well, that the quarterback was still able to look good and make a lot of plays.
Let's segue to baseball, shall we then?
Let's do it.
Tough weekend. Cold, yeah. Cloudy.
Brutal.
Boston College. But Florida State putting their nose to the grindstone, getting another series victory by virtue of Friday's 12-4 win and the Sunday 9-2 victory. Mm-hmm. A sandwich in between that was an extra innings loss on Saturday 7-6 to Boston College. It seems like this is like the James Tibbs weekend, the Jaime Ferrer James Tibbs weekend, picking up the heart of the lineup. They went into this weekend without Cam Leiter. Could have been a really tough, treacherous path for Florida State. And then, obviously, on their kind of backs against it on Sunday, Corey. What do you think you learned from Florida State, or what do you take away from another series victory for Florida State, who now sits at 26-5?
I wonder if they'll be ranked ahead of Florida.
They got swept?
I know. Got swept at Missouri, yeah. So I wonder if they'll drop it all or if they actually move up, because Missouri is apparently a pretty good team. Who knows?
Scherzer might be back on the mound for the Tigers. Who knows?
Did he pitch at Missouri?
Yeah. Can you believe that?
Max Scherzer did?
Yeah.
No, did he really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
And I think that the Tennessee coach was like the pitching coach, or like helped recruit him. And he was like the Vitello guy. I'm pretty sure he was like at Missouri when that all happened.
Wow, that's crazy.
I'll fact check it. That sounds
trivia,
crazy.
Aslan. That seems impossible. Good job. anyway, I think the biggest development to me anyway was Dorsey on Sunday. He got the start because Leiter didn't. So they moved everybody up. Arnold pitched on Friday and was just as good as he is. He gave up a wind-aided homer. He gave up a three-run homer that it barely – I mean, it counted. It got over, barely got over the left field fence, but it did, an oppo home run. But other than that, he was lights out. He was really, really good. And then Whitaker, I thought, was pretty darn good on Saturday. It's just every time he leaves the game with runners on base, whoever comes in to pitch behind him, those base runners are scoring. Whitaker should just be like, no, you're not taking me off the mound. I know when I leave this game, that dude on first is going to score, and it's going to be my earned run. Even though he's on first, that shouldn't count as my earned run. It will be. But anyway, I thought he was what he is. He's decent. But Dorsey, giving them whatever it was, five innings, I think, one hit. Mm-hmm. That's no walks. That's potentially really big that he pitched like that. Now, it was cold. It wasn't the easiest for any of these guys to hit. It's never fun to hit in cold weather. But him doing that was big. Lodi's getting back in and having some big hits was good to see. And on Sunday, what I like about Link when it comes to this, You know, Lodis was struggling a little bit. Well, he's got a guy in Cal Fisher that he likes, a freshman that can play. So he puts him at shortstop. Then Ferreau starts struggling a little bit at second. And he's like, you know what?
0-5 on Saturday.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? I got to, you know, I let Lodis play. He had a couple hits. I'm going to keep him in the lineup. Now I'm going to move Fisher to second. Like, you know, we got three guys for two spots. And if some guy's struggling, then Fisher can take their spot. If Fisher starts to struggle, then Ferreau's back in. Like, who knows? But I like that he's not afraid to go make changes like that could be considered drastic. But overall, we know Tibbs is good. We know Jaime Ferrer is a really good college hitter.
A pretty good weekend.
He did, man. He just takes really healthy hacks. They all had a pretty good weekend. Max Williams hit a big home run. They didn't end up winning the game, but he had a home run on Saturday. Just up and down the lineup. It's a good lineup. We know it is. They scored, what'd they score? 18, 27 runs in three games on the road in like 38, 40 degree weather. That's just what they do. They didn't commit an error on Saturday or on Sunday. The one thing, so there's two things. Obviously, the biggest development is Dorsey. I thought that was great to see. That's a kid that, if you don't remember, gave up the grand slams and back-to-back games to Clemson to essentially lose them both when he looked like he was going to be your closer. For him to come back and has kind of righted the ship and been pretty darn good the last few outings, that's a really substantial development as you get closer to June. And then I'm not in love with the defensive catching. They had four wild pitches on Saturday that ended up, honestly, that cost them the game. Armstrong came into the game. Maybe it was a tie game or they're down by run. He ends up giving up two runs essentially on a pass ball and a wild pitch, both of which could have been blocked. They might have been scored as two wild pitches, but Holbrook could have blocked them both, blocked neither, and they scored runs that way. Like, that's the one element of the defense. Everything else in the infield, I think, is really good. I just the defense behind the plate still leaves a little bit to be desired. You want to get them to you know, squash that, get better at it. Jackson West has a really good bat, man. He's a good hitter, and he's young. He's going to be here next year. I like what I see with him. He's a good left-handed bat. I like his attitude, his personality. Just hope he gets a little bit better back there because he needs to be if they're going to reach some really high goals. Same with Holbrook. I'd like his bat, but I wish they were a little bit better defensively behind the plate. But otherwise, man, I thought the defense was exceptional. But that's, you know, you come into a game, you lose a game. Like, it's hard to win, period, in college baseball. Ask Florida. It's just hard to win. But you come into the game, Armstrong, he walks a guy and hits a guy, and they both end up scoring.
Joe Charles was credited with two wild pitches before Armstrong came in.
Maybe that's who it was. Maybe it wasn't. Yeah, that's right. They scored with Joe Charles pitching. Yeah. And it's like, man, that's a wild pitch, but it's a curveball. That's where he's trying to throw it. You've got to block that. I mean, it's back-footed. It's almost barely – it hits his glove. Like, that's got to be a play you make, and you can't let two runs score that way. And then Armstrong comes in and walks the leadoff guy. I think they tied up the game. And then he comes in on that Saturday and immediately walks the leadoff hitter. Can't do that. You just can't. You let him put it in play. You got a good defense. And then he hits a guy one out later. Either one or both of them. I think the guy that walked scored, but he was only in second because he hit the guy. Like, you know, so that was a little disappointing. I felt like they gave that game away with some sloppy pitching and catcher defense in the middle innings. But then to come back, they're trailing, I think. They trailing 2-1 in the sixth on Sunday?
No, like, they were down 1-0 in the fifth.
Okay, and then they tied at 1-1, and I thought they got
actually, you're right, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, they were down 2-1 going into the seventh inning. I apologize.
And then they scored five runs
yep.
on the road.
Yep.
Again, it's in front of 100 people, if that. But it's still, it's not – but those can be hard environments to play in too, man. You got to make your own energy. Those can be really hard to play in too. Yeah. And Lord knows, any sport you're playing at Boston College, any sport besides hockey – you got to create your own energy because nobody goes to any of their games. I don't even know if most people in that city know they have a Boston College there because the students must not know that there are athletic teams there that they can go cheer on because they are never there for any sport. But anyway, so for them to come back and score five in the seventh and then a couple more in the – or three more in the eighth, I think Tibbs had five RBIs in those two innings alone.
Yeah.
That's a big win, man. That's a big win to go on the road, and because it would have been a bad loss. It would have been a bad series loss against an average ACC team. So for them to come in and do that, again, just keep it rolling. Keep good momentum going. You're now What are they, 26-5?
That is correct.
Okay, that'll work. That'll play. That'll play, and they got a big one. What a week they got this week, huh?
Mm-hmm.
They got the Gators on Tuesday at home, and then the Hurricanes are coming Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You hope Cam Leiter will be back to pitch one of those games.
Cannot wait, man. Yeah, Joe Charles also pitched on Sunday and had a couple walks, let a hit, surrender that go-ahead run for Boston College. So not the best weekend for Joe, but again, you know, he did so well against Louisville last weekend. And like you said, it was wild pitches that probably, you know, the defense kind of betrayed him to a certain degree.
It's odd, though, to me, and this isn't his fault because he's not calling pitches. He throws 95 miles an hour.
That's
94, 95 miles an hour. I've seen it on the gun. Yeah. And 80% of his pitches are breaking balls. Like, it's like, man, sometimes I'd like to trust your stuff more with the 95. Like, see if they can hit it first before you keep walking them with your breaking ball. But, you know, I didn't see how he pitched on Sunday and if he was missing with his fastball or not. Maybe he doesn't trust that he can throw it for strikes. I don't know. But I'd like him to be a little more aggressive there. But, you know, it's hard to complain about a team they have some deficiencies. Every team in the country does. But they're 26-5, and I'm assuming they're going to be ranked in the top 10 by every major outlet after this past week where they went 4-1.
Tip of the cap to Brendan Oxford, too. He threw two-thirds of an inning in that loss on Saturday, and then he comes back and throws 3 1/3 on Sunday, gets credit for the win, only, you know, scatters out 3 hits, no walks, no runs, 3 punch-outs. So he seems to be emerging as one of those reliable guys.
Yep.
And I still think they've got guys, you know, we'll see what happens with Yoel Tejeda. He came in against Bethune-Cookman last weekend.
The other BCC.
And, you know, he struggled in his first start. He threw 12 pitches, and they were all balls. And that was his second game, Bethune. And, you know, so hopefully maybe there's something to be unleashed with him. And by the time you get into May, you kind of know some pieces and how they're going to fit. But they're emerging. That picture is going to get crystallized, I feel like, here probably in the next, like, 2-3 weeks when it comes to bullpen reliability. And if, you know, Whitaker can keep doing what he's doing, and obviously Jamie Arnold is Jamie Arnold. And, if, like you said, if Cam Leiter's healthy, too, that's huge. So,
well, and then Dorsey looking good again. That was, you know, kind of, I mean, again, they had one hit in 5 innings in a spot start. That was really, really good to see and something to build on for him because, again, like I said, I think he's going to be an important bat. And you want to get Cam Smith going again. He struggled this weekend. He had a chance to to drive in a go-ahead run in that Saturday game. Lodis, I think, led off with a double, got moved over to third on a ground out to the right side. So Williams did his job, and then Cam Smith grounded out to the pitcher. So you want him to he might have had one hit this weekend. If he gets going again, that's when this offense goes from good to special.
Yeah.
Because Tibbs is one of the best hitters in the United States. He's just incredible. Just incredible. It doesn't matter. He is an incredible hitter. Ferrer is Ferrer. You got 3-4 locked and loaded. 1 and 2 are kind of your wild cards, right? Max Williams hits the ball harder than anyone on the team, or as hard as anyone on the team, and he can hit it 500 feet. Cam Smith is an MLB first-round pick, potentially.
Yeah.
Get those two guys swinging, reaching their potential. Well, now you've got a deep lineup. Well, man, that first four, they're all, other than Ferrer, well, Tibbs isn't a huge kid either, but he hits like he's 6'8", 300. I mean, he's a great hitter. But Smith and Williams, if they can get going, man, that's a special top of the lineup, which nobody wants to face. So anyway, I it's just in a little mini slump. It's not terrible,
right? Right.
But you want him to come out of that, and if he comes out of that and starts hitting, this is a special offense again.
Still batting .408 on the year, though, you know. So
And Tibbs, I think, is already like, does Tibbs have 50 RBIs?
That might be accurate.
That seems like a lot through. What do they play, 31 games?
Yeah. Let me see here. I should have it in front of me. RBIs. Tibbs got 52.
That's crazy. Good for him.
Absolutely.
Atlanta, baby.
Yeah, man. That's right.
Yep.
Gwinnett or Fulton County?
Not Gwinnett. I think he's a Fulton County kid Cobb County kid. Whatever. It's still Metro Atlanta. We claim them all.
Yeah, I gotcha. Softball, meanwhile, 28-10 after another series victory in the ACC, this time over Louisville. 4-3 gritty victory, I'm told it was, on Sunday. They recorded Lonnie Alameda's 900th career win in the series. I think Saturday's victory might have been.
Yeah, and then 901 on Sunday.
Yeah, so They've got Notre Dame this weekend. That game on Friday's at 6 o'clock, and then the Miami game's at 7 o'clock. So come on out, everybody. Come on, come all. The Miami game.
We also buried the lead. How about our girl woman from across the pond, Lottie Wode? Did you see that?
Somebody tweeted something about Knowles on top in Augusta, so I'm assuming that's what it is. Because I took a look at my phone. I'm like, huh? I'm like, it's not Masters week.
Yeah, that's next week. That's this week coming up for Koepka. Yeah. But they've made – I don't know how long this event's been going on. It's the women's amateur, and they do it at Augusta. Like, it's the Augusta National Amateur. I'm not even sure what it's called. I don't think it's been around for that long because, I mean, we all know the history of Augusta and women. But anyway, so that now they allow them to play on the course. And Lottie Wode, Florida State, I'm going to say sophomore, from Britain, England, she was the day three leader, or she was the leader going into the final round. And then with two holes left, she was down by one. So what does she do? She just birdies the last two holes at Augusta National to win the whole thing. That's really cool, man. That was a really cool, and it was on NBC. So like Tirico was broadcasting it. It was on like regular NBC and on Peacock. So that was a really cool thing for the Florida State golf program in general, but just for her and the way she won it too. Like she went out and won it. Nobody collapsed, and she wasn't having a bad round, even though she lost the lead. The girl that took it from her shot like a 66 Sunday to take the lead on Saturday. And then she comes and knows that she's got to birdie the last two holes to win it, and that's exactly what she did.
It's the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Okay. But it's like it's got – I feel like it's the best players.
It debuted in 19, by the way.
So I was right. So it hadn't been around for that long.
No.
I thought you were going to say it debuted in like 1971. And I'm like, no, it didn't. No chance were they letting women play the college girls, women play golf over there in 1971. So it's cool that they – I don't think she gets a green jacket for it. That's still for the actual Masters winners. But how cool for her to not only play that course, but to go win it. And if you watch the highlights on YouTube, which I didn't watch it live. I watched it on YouTube on Saturday night because that's the life I have, folks. I'm dedicated to you guys. There's the gallery, the faces on the gallery, because, you know, they show her reaction to the putt, and she just gives kind of like a fist bump. But the people behind her, and it was a lot of people, were so genuinely excited for it. It's a really cool image of all them smiling and jumping up in the air, hands up in the air, because she made like a 14-foot putt, 12-foot putt to win it. It was really cool to see. We should try to get her on the show at some point, Aslan. I was thinking about that.
All right.
She'd be a good interview.
Let's do that. I'll try. I'll reach out. She's really in demand, but we'll try to elbow our way
in. We'll get her, and then after Koepka wins this week, we'll get him.
Yeah. Okay.
Or Berger. We'll take Berger, too, yeah, if he wins it.
Danny. What happened to our guy that was Swedish? That was like the
Jonas Blix.
Yeah.
I think he's still golfing. I don't know how often he's on the PGA Tour, but I think he won twice on the tour. Like he had two wins in a short amount of time. So, I don't know. I assume he's still playing. His name doesn't come up a lot.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you were correct. Lottie Wode is a sophomore.
There we go. I wonder if she'll go pro.
Never in doubt.
Stay for all four, Lottie. Caitlin Clark played 4 years. You can play 4 years. You can get some NIL money.
Yeah, that's right. You can. All right. That's a wrap for us then. Actually, yeah, no. Ooh, bonus content. Recruiting, Corey. People want to know about recruiting.
Big weekend for the Noles?
Big weekend for the Noles. Lots of good vibes, I feel like. But, you know, I can't do the vibe check because I'm an old dude.
Right.
But we got our guy, Matt Lasserre, who does all the hard work. All the...
Talk about a kid with some riz. Old Lasserre's got it in spades.
Amen, brother.
Did that sound? That sounded like a hip thing to say,
that was,
right?
That was something a young guy would say.
That yeah, was great.
Crushed it. All right, quick break, and then we'll have Matt break down recruiting right after this. Y'all want recruiting? You got to pay for it most of the time. We'll give it to you for free just for this time. Got Matt Lasserre, staff writer, warchant.com, also helps us out with a lot of recruiting. Matt, how are you, man? How was your weekend in Tallahassee here, man? Big time?
Yeah, good, man. Good, man. Really busy. Out at Moore a lot this weekend.
That's what he does, everybody. All right, let's call it maybe pick six with Matt Lasserre, although I feel like there's probably somebody else that does a pick six segment. Dalen McCutcheon, man. Obviously, so many impressive guys on campus here this past weekend. Dalen McCutcheon, what sort of impact do you think this past weekend had for him? He's a receiver, 5'11", 170.
Yeah, I mean, I think FSU did a really good job. This is his third time here, I believe. He came for a camp over the summer, came for, I want to say, the Miami game, and this was his third visit. He will be taking an official in June. I think it's that last weekend, the 21st, 23rd. Florida State continues to do really well here. In my opinion, he's the best receiver in the class. I'm a little biased because he's from the DFW area right by me, but I love him. Florida State's made a really good push. Every single time, keeps getting better. What really stood out to me this time was the fact that he said Florida State is the school he uses to compare all other schools to. So not the exact words gold standard, but that was kind of the vibe I got from it. Just the way, again, obviously Florida State's the one you're comparing every other school you go to. That kind of means they're up there and they're, I don't want to say the lead, but they're at least one of those top schools.
RPM Machine's got Florida State, Southern Cal, Oklahoma, and Texas in the mix right now for that product out of Lovejoy. Let's go to the trenches real quick. Micah DeBose, Viger. God bless this program and these coaches. I mean, going after everybody and anybody out there. I never like going after Alabama guys because they're never going to leave. But, you know, he's 6'4", 335, worth a kick on the tires. What sort of weekend do you think Micah had in Tallahassee getting to know everybody?
Another really good weekend where Florida State did really well. He even admitted to us after his visit that Florida State was probably not in his top five before when he arrived Saturday morning. But afterwards, he said they shot all the way up into the top three schools that he mentioned that would be above them, or at least also in the top three, LSU and Ohio State. As for top five, he added Auburn and Alabama in there as well. But clearly, if you're going from being unranked to top three, you're doing a pretty good job. He has a really good relationship with both Adkins and Norvell. He said he would play for both. Again, this is one where Florida State, I think, really, really shot themselves up this weekend. He's flirted with visiting for a while, kept kind of backing off, and finally made the move to come. Obviously, I believe it's Mobile, Alabama. Yep. So it's not that far. It's Alabama kid, and it's always hard to get kids out of Alabama, but that's pretty close still to Tallahassee, not a far drive. But again, did really well. Adkins loves connecting with these offensive linemen, and every time they come, it always seems to move the needle. And this is the one where I think Florida State moved the needle the most over the weekend. Again, it's like FSU baseball going from unranked all the way up in D1 rankings. Like, clearly something did well happen there.
Yeah, well played. Well played, Matt. He's 6'4", 335, so he's a big dude. LSU, Alabama in the mix here. 103rd ranked prospect overall for this 2025 class. So I'm not faulting the guys for going after him. It's just, you know, I'm always cynical and skeptical about pulling these kids out of these certain geographical spots. One guy they don't have any problem with is Solomon Thomas. He's a commit. He's right down I-10 in Jacksonville over at Raines High School. You think things firmed up maybe a little bit with Solomon on this past weekend's visit?
So it's kind of interesting, because if you go and watch the video over on the YouTube channel, he starts off by saying, I want to keep all my options open, which obviously isn't the best statement you want to hear. But as the interview goes on, keeps going, you see him warm up a little bit, and you see him, he calls Florida State home. He's like, oh, it's just good to be back home, and stuff like that. And I honestly do think, I thought this whole time he's pretty firm. UF is the one to worry about, if anything. He's going to be taking an official to FSU, UF, and LSU. I think for a while this has always been a UF-FSU battle, even when we talked to him at camp over the summer. And obviously the Gators aren't going to push off, but I really think it's super firm, in my opinion at least. It's just one of those, and he even said it, you can go to these other schools and you can think it's great, but then when he comes back to Florida State, it just gets a different feeling. It's a different vibe than he gets anywhere else, and just something that keeps reminding him whenever he comes back. And this is one people love to talk about on the boards, honestly. He visited in January. He's back already, and he'll be back in June. I'm not sure if he'll be back before then, before his official visit, but we do know he'll be back in June again.
Do you get as surprised as I get when I hear kids still mention Florida? And I get it's the SEC, it's the University of Florida, but is it any more real or rational, sensible to you when you hear kids still mentioning Florida in this day and age?
Yeah, it is weird, because I mean, who knows if Billy Napier is still going to be there come, yeah, in what, 6 months, yeah, 9 months, whatever it is. Like, like nobody knows. And even when I was down there for the UF game and I was around recruits then too, it's a different vibe, at least in my opinion. It's different seeing kids. I mean, I haven't seen kids after a Florida State loss yet, but it's different seeing kids after a UF loss when they're visiting that school. Like, the vibe's definitely a little different.
Yeah. All right. Well, probably plenty of that coming their way this fall as well. Let's stay with the offense. 6'6", 230-pound tight end Hollis Davidson, currently an Auburn commit. 91% of the RPM machine also behind Davidson, sticking with his pledge to Auburn. Can Florida State start the flip, and did it start at all this past weekend, do you think?
So this was a weird one because it's what we're hearing and what you kind of saw in the interview are a little different. And if you watch the interview, you're not going to feel confident at all with it. But I do think Florida State made a move here. He is committed to Auburn, so I think he's one of those kids that kind of wants to stay a little quiet and not really like make people mad, you know, kind of that kind of thing. But I do think Florida State made a really good move here. I think on the inside, it went very, very well. And he didn't say he was coming for an official in the interview, but I do get the vibe that I think he will end up down the road making that decision to come for an official visit. But if you talk to him and you watch the interview, you're going to think it's all Auburn. I want him to put it out there now. I do not think it's all Auburn. Florida State is very much in this race here.
He's also from Georgia, everybody, so it's not trying to pull an Alabama kid away from Auburn. So, little good vibes behind that one.
Yep.
This has been an offense bonanza, everybody. You all want playmakers. It's an offense meant for playmakers. We don't think about offensive linemen being playmakers, but they help create the conditions for playmaking. Let's go back to your neck of the woods. Not quite maybe your neck of the woods, but it's Texas, so you're a citizen of the world at that point. Ty Haywood, 6'5", 280-pound offensive lineman. I see Oklahoma, A&M, TCU, Bama on his recruiting page. When's Florida State going to get on that RPM in the top four, do you think?
Yeah, so he is in my neck of the woods. Denton's not that far. Denton is still in the DFW area. Okay. But the interesting part about this recruitment is that he kind of doesn't take many visits, or in general just hasn't taken many. So getting a visit to Florida State, even being so far from home, is huge. The fact that he was just here is a really big deal. And I think it went really well. I've not had the chance to talk to him yet, but from seeing the vibe around it all, I'm still working on talking with him. I've got in contact, so that'll be coming soon, so watch out for that. But I think it went really well. Again, Adkins has a way with connecting with these kids. He's very personable and does very, very well here. And I think this is going to continue. I think Florida State's going to stay in that, and that relationship will continue to grow. But the biggest thing is just him getting on campus this weekend, in my opinion. The fact that he does not take many visits, that's just huge.
How about a quarterback? Or how about the ultimate playmaker? 6'4.5". We're going to round it up to 5, Brady. That's what we do at Florida State. If you commit, especially, we'll make you 6'6". 6'4.5", 215 out of Newberry Park, California. Brady Smeagol. Did I say it right?
Yeah, like Lord of the Rings.
Okay, nice. He just looks like a West Coast kind of guy, but he was in Tallahassee this past weekend. How do you think he embraced and processed being on the campus of Florida State University this past weekend?
Yeah, so I'm supposed to talk to him tomorrow, and again, look out for that on board story-wise. It looked like Will Fong talked with him, and that story is up on the PRB, and I think it's on the website as well. But it seems like he's liked it a lot. Again, I'll find out more tomorrow, but I got to see him, interact with him a good amount outside of Moore, just while he was on the visit. I mean, he was here for over 48 hours, close to 3 days. I believe he left Sunday morning sometime. He has connections in the program, previous relationships, to where I think it went really well. I think this is a guy that's up the top of their 2026 quarterback board. Previously, I thought the 2026 quarterback should commit soon because Tremel committed just around a year ago and Luke committed just around a year before that. I think they're taking more of their time with this one, but I do think it went really well. And that's one guy that Florida State's really going to push for when it comes to that 2026 quarterback. Again, you want that guy to be one of the first people to commit in the class so you can kind of build around it. Like we saw it with Luke last year, ended up being a leader of the class in it early and kind of recruited everyone. So you kind of want to get someone like that on board early. And I think Florida State has done a very good job of starting to get there with Brady. And I think the other school that was kind of in it or the perceived leader at some point was Michigan. So it comes down to, would you rather play for Sharon Moore or Mike Norvell? And quarterback-wise, I don't know there's much of a track record with Sharon Moore yet.
Right. Yeah, let's just want to hand the ball off a bunch. play the two games. Just play that whole second half against Penn State when Harbaugh wasn't coaching. And Sharon Moore was like, yeah, just keep running it. Just keep running it.
Yep.
But anyways, Matt, do you have a sense at all? Is Brady like the number one, like the number one top guy on the board for Florida State when it comes to quarterbacks for 26? Or are there a couple guys that are kind of in the mix for that distinction?
I think there's still a good amount of guys in the mix. One name that comes to mind is Fazeon Brandon. He was here, I think, in January, but he was definitely here already this year. They've brought in a few guys, 2026 quarterback guys. Another one from Jesuit High School down in Tampa they've also brought in. There's another guy who I really like, Roman Seymour, who is a FSU legacy. His dad played D-end here in the 90s. He's from Houston. I really like him, but I think he's kind of lower on the board to where, like, if you miss on a few of these kids, you can probably go grab them easily, especially being a legacy. But, yeah, they're going after some top guys already. In the last few years with Tramiel and Luke, they kind of went after them when they weren't as big, and then they worked their way up. But now we're kind of seeing them going after the top guys from the jump.
Yeah. One other thing before some bonus content, if you will, Matt, just – I'm sure people listening to this are like, oh, this is great. Sounds like everything's great. Like, everybody loves Florida State. That's awesome. Like, when are they going to commit? And I know things are kind of moving up with the calendar because the early signing period now and guys want to have things done before, you know, the season. Does it feel like this is the time of the year now where guys really make their visits and kind of get some fact-finding done, and then come summer they'll make their officials, and then at that point they'll maybe start pulling the trigger? Or can you give us kind of an idea of, not like a specific timeline for any of these guys, but is there a general kind of time frame with the way these guys work in this kind of new calendar age?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. We've always seen with Florida State in general, at least last year, last cycle, it's kind of back heavy on the commitments, or at least you're going to get more in the summer than you are getting all, like, Ohio State and USC have gotten been like the big ones of the past 2 weeks, getting a bunch of commits in one day on a Sunday. Florida State, we're not really going to see much of that from. I think it'll come more after the officials. And also that comes from the way the coaching staff evaluates and pitches. Like, as of right now, I just don't think they're taking many commitments. It's just the way the staff is. It is weird. I'll admit, like, it's weird. But I think once you get into the summer or maybe later on in the spring is when you'll start seeing more kids pop.
All right, that was six dudes in like 10 minutes we spoke about. But how about a guy that wasn't on campus, the aforementioned Tramiel Jones? He's a pretty big deal now, right?
Yeah, Elite 11 invite today out of the Oxford, Mississippi Regional.
Represent.
Yeah, he got the invite. Him and the Notre Dame quarterback commit got the invite to the finals in L.A. And also, just a quick note, Florida State did have a 2025 quarterback on campus, Antoine Hill. That is nothing to worry about. Tramiel is their guy, and clearly it's starting to show. It's the same thing as Luke last year, where this guy's going to start shooting up and getting a lot of national recognition, and I think the Elite 11 invite is just the start of it.
Will it be another busy weekend this coming weekend? Matt, or was the scrimmage like one of the bigger kind of dates for this recruiting cycle?
Yeah, I think we'll still see kids come for practice this week. I'm not exactly sure who yet. Just look out for that on the PRB, but yeah, I don't expect too much next Saturday because there's no practice or scrimmage going on. Probably the next huge day will likely be the spring game.
There we go. All right, Matt Lacerre joining us from Warchant.com, obviously, our staff writer, recruiting analyst as well. Matt, appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
All right, that's a wrap then. Thanks again to Matt for breaking things down with us here on the podcast. We go to practice tomorrow, Corey. Yes, and then headlines is tomorrow as well.
Yep.
Sweet. All right. Any predictions? UConn, Purdue?
I mean, UConn just looks like a juggernaut. And the problem is they have a dude that's like almost Edie's size. So he can't even like lord over a team like he normally does.
He's not as girthy, though, man. You know?
He moves well, though. Like, he moves better than Edie. Like, that's going to be – Edie never has to play somebody his own height. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But I fear UConn is just too good. And Hurley's such a likable guy. Right,
come on
the sidelines, just watching him, just likable. Doesn't ever loses cool or calm or anything. I would expect UConn to win. I'll be rooting for Purdue, almost certainly means UConn will win.
Donovan Klingon, he's 7'2".
Yeah,
I wonder how much he weighs though.
I would guess he's pretty put together, man. I mean, I would guess 300. I mean,
7'2", 280.
You know he's 300. Come on. They just don't want to say that. And then they say DJ Burns is like 280.
Zach E's only 300 pounds?
Yeah,
no way.
That's what I'm saying.
He's 7'4".
Yeah. Hey, buddy. I know. Well, either way, it's when's the last time we had 2 7-footers matching up in a college basketball final? And congratulations to South Carolina.
Yes. What? Undefeated again? Come on, Don Staley. Chill
That's
out.
Crazy. So they're 38. They were 38-0 this year. They were 36-0 last year until they lost to Iowa in the Final Four. So 74 of 75 games they've won. And I don't remember. Did they win it in 22?
I think this is
crazy.
They had a Leah Boston still, I feel like.
Yeah, they had Leah Boston last year. That was her last game. That's really impressive. I really like her as a person. I think she's a really good ambassador. I loved how she was after the game. It was an interesting, fun Final Four, and it's always fun to see. It's just you can tell, I don't know, man, all these women's greats aren't used to the sport maybe being in the spotlight like it is now, and it's like y'all need to. I know what you're doing, but take it easy on Caitlin.
Did I miss something? Again, I was not on social, and I saw Ryan Russillo tweet something tongue in cheek. Like, was Caitlin Clark not getting a lot of props? Is that what young kids still say?
Yeah. So it was, what's her name? Brianna Stewart was like, yeah, she's not one of the greatest of all time.
Ooh.
Unless she wins a championship.
Ooh.
Which
that's
is
very
like,
NBA core. That's very NBA.
It's crazy. It's like, Brianna, your team that you were on, you literally had the top 3 picks in the WNBA draft. Do you see what she's playing with at Iowa? It's you can't compare what, like, you can't say just because you won a title, you're great, but because her getting that team to the championship game 2 years in a row, that's an incredible accomplishment. That, to me, is more impressive than Brianna Stewart winning a championship with a roster full of great WNBA players. You know what I mean? That's where the whole title chase thing, the title culture in sports, back in the day, I would have loved for Dominique to win a championship. You know what I mean? I would have loved for the Braves to win more championships. They were still great. You know, Greg Maddux was a great pitcher who won one World Series, but he was a great pitcher, man. Dominique Wilkins was a great basketball player that didn't win any titles. Caitlin Clark is one of the greatest college basketball players that's ever been. She did not win a title, and I don't think because she couldn't beat the juggernaut that was South Carolina in 2024, that makes her any less great. I mean, it was just – but anyway, so Brianna Stewart said that. Taurasi kind of dragged her a little bit.
Ooh.
And saying she's in for a rude awakening when she gets in the WNBA and all that.
Ooh.
And it's like okay, but again, she might be passing to better people too.
Mm.
Like, maybe they don't blow as many layups as the girls in Iowa City did this year.
Ladies, sorry.
I always say girls. I'm sorry. And then somebody else said something too. But it's just like, it's okay to just it's like Barkley complaining about the new age, the new generation. Mm-hmm. It's just what it feels like. And it's never really mattered, quite honestly, and I'm not trying to be rude about it, but nobody's really asked these old heads, is what they called, right?
Yeah,
of the WNBA, what they think of the up-and-coming players. There's also never been anyone in college athletics, in my opinion, that has gotten this kind of attention. It's unprecedented. So I get the backlash to it, too. Like, even Brady on Sunday was like, enough. We get it. She's awesome.
No, Brady didn't say that. Brady was like, this is awesome. Brady didn't say anything even remotely critical.
No, he did. He was kind of rooting for South Carolina, honestly. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's your cousin. You're rooting against your cousin. She's one of us. She's a Clark. It was funny to see that, the backlash. It was inevitable to all the attention she got. But that doesn't, just because the attention was over the top, doesn't mean the attention wasn't warranted. I mean, this is crazy. I like what she did for that. They're going to get 18 million people watch that game, I bet.
Mm.
It's really, really remarkable. But also, South Carolina was a worthy adversary because they were awesome. They're that's a really, and I just really like her as a person, Dawn Staley. Gino, can take him or leave him.
I like Gino.
He's okay, right? But Dawn, Kim Mulkey, some other coaches that maybe I'm not huge fans of, but I really like Dawn Staley a lot.
Yeah.
So anyway, nobody cares. Nobody cares about Corey Clark talking about women's basketball. I get it. But let's hope that the Noles can, let's hope Tania Latson.
Haley, if we combine her with Haley Van Lith, that's a Final Four team, right?
Yeah, it is. It is, but I don't. Yes, it is.
Come on, come play for Brooke. You'll get the green light, Haley. Whatever you want,
you will.
Green light.
You will. And bang. Yeah, they'll have. Hopefully, more people will show up, so maybe they can afford to get somebody like Van Lith to these games or to this program. But yeah, it's tonight. Latson's really good. It's the cool thing about women's basketball right now is there's a lot of stars. And Juju's awesome. Mm-hmm. Becker's is awesome. Yeah, it's crazy that it became so mainstream. And that's what was so cool about Dawn Staley after the game was basically telling Caitlin Clark during the trophy ceremony, like, hold your head up. What you did for this sport is unbelievable. It's unmatched. You have raised, you know, she was just really complimentary of the attention she brought to the impact she made on the sport as a whole. And for the people that don't know, Dawn Staley was a great basketball player. Like, she was on the Olympic team. She was an All-American at Virginia. She was a coach at Temple while she was still in the WNBA. That was just really cool. I like that she seemed to appreciate in the moment what Caitlin has done for the sport. And was it just killer? Like, you know, she didn't do the hand in her face to Caitlin while she was on the stage. So, whatever. What can you do? That's enough about Caitlin Clark.
That's Talking Women's Hoops. We'll have Richard Deitch and Charlie Krem on with us later this week. Look at next year's emerging stars. Yeah, Dawn Staley, 2 years ago, South Carolina won it all. They were 35-2. Last year, they were 36-1, and they just capped off a 38-0 season.
I mean, come on. So they've lost three times in 3 years?
Yep.
All right. Well, that's enough now.
Yeah.
Let somebody else. Come on, Dawn.
Let's get the backlash. Start the backlash against Dawn Staley on tomorrow's show.
Yeah, exactly right. Enough of this, man. Come on. Let somebody else win.
Actually, probably won't be a tomorrow show. Well, we got some plans of stuff. Guys moving around. Corey will be driving down. NCAA championship games on. Kind of want to watch it. But if there's anything of great import in the orbit of Florida State Athletics, we'll be here because that's what we do seemingly every single day. That's a wrap for us, though. That was a long goodbye. Sorry about all that. Check out the Jeff Cameron Show, 1 to 3 o'clock. This has been Wake Up War Champ, presented by the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.